wonderful.
That's good so far.
But we have nobody from the non-commercials yet.
Right, okay. Well, I'll just get started on things that aren't controversial. The first thing, I'd just like to make some comments on how I've tried to set the agenda for these meetings based on the requests for agenda topics. But what I've taken the approach that the task of the Names Council is primarily to develop policy by consensus on domain name issues, not the restructure of ICANN necessarily, although the expertise of the Names panel obviously can provide input to that, but there are other forums. The Names Council is not the only input into the ERC or the board. There are other ways of getting those views across. So my approach is to try and focus on the actual policy work, and in addition, we seek to offer guidance on structural issues, and especially using that council discussion list and email voting, rather than replace the policy development by solely by discussions on structure. So in the last call on the agenda, we had the task forces of Who Is and Transfers report. On this call, we're sort of looking at the remaining task forces that are presently underway, and getting a review of where they're at, whether we need to take any action on those or whether they're going fine.
Excuse me, Roger Cochetti's joining.
So that's the approach I've taken. Welcome, Roger. It's Bruce Tonkin speaking.
Hello, Bruce. Are we still waiting, or is the meeting started?
We've started. I've just made some comments on the approach I've taken on trying to set an agenda for the meeting. So, yes, we haven't got into anything controversial as yet. So I guess the next comment is, are there any comments on the agenda, anything anyone would like to change there?
Bruce, it's Marilyn. I guess I have a question, and this is it's just a question about whether or not we need to add it to the agenda. Since the final...
Excuse me, Harold Feld is joining.
Since the final version of the ERC report has been issued, I wondered if we should discuss whether the resolution should be put on hold while we all read in detail the final report and then see whether the authors see any need to make any changes to their resolutions. I apologize that I've not had a chance to read the final report in detail, only scanned it. I don't know that there's any need for any change, but I thought it might need to at least be noted as an item.
Okay, well, let's discuss that under item 3.1, which is an update on those resolutions and the process. Okay, any other comments on the agenda?
Good morning, this is Harold here. Just first an apology, I'm here by myself, so I may fade in and out. And at some point, I'm going to have to get out to park the car. But what report was just issued? I'm sorry.
Harold, the ERC has issued their third report.
Okay.
It was issued, I guess, about 12 hours ago, probably, something like that.
I can. We never sleep.
That's right. Okay. The next item on the agenda then for this call is to approve the minutes of the last meeting. Do I have a proposer for that?
So moved. Ken Stubbs.
Second,
okay. All those in favour, just say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone against? Anyone abstaining? Okay. We'll just record that the minutes were unanimously accepted. Okay. The next item is picking up issues that have arisen from the meeting that we had on the 12th of September. On the 12th of September, there was some discussion around some resolutions on the ERC report and also some resolutions that Elizabeth had proposed in the area of problems or disagreements between IANA and the CCTLDs. Those resolutions had further discussion at the teleconference on the 26th, and those resolutions were finalised and an email voting has commenced for that for a 14-day period. Marilyn made the comment that some of those resolutions may well need to be changed or modified in response to the ERC report. From what I've read of the report, Marilyn, I can say that the area of Phillips resolutions are the report is fairly consistent, I think, with the second version. Would you agree to that, Philip? Have you read that, sir?
Yes, I would. There's no change in those key issues.
So I gather you wouldn't want to change your resolutions based on that report at this stage?
Probably not.
Yeah. However, I think it is perhaps reasonable in the context that we do have a 14-day period, the resolutions relating to the CCTLDs and also the use of the Security Committee to review some of the procedures for DNS data quality do require some careful thought. And I think the outcome of the email voting at the end of the 14-day period will be more or less going straight to the ICANN board to use in its considerations of its decisions in China. So I really open it up to discussion whether people think that the voting should be suspended or extended or shortened. Anyone like to join the queue on that?
I will.
That was Harold, was it? Okay, anyone else want to speak to that?
Carrie, depending on what Harold said.
I'll just put you down.
Bruce.
Marilyn,
I'd always
automatically put that name down.
Ken, depending on what Carrie, Marilyn, and Harold have all. See, we could stretch this out here, you know.
That's right, and I know once Marilyn says that she'll speak, Ken usually likes to speak after.
Oh, no. On the contrary.
Well, I'm Ken. I'm glad to know I have a fan club.
Okay, Harold, you have the floor.
I would be in favor of shortening the voting period. I don't think, we've all been following the discussion online fairly closely, which I have to say is very positive development on the evolution of these resolutions. And I just, I think we can shorten it down to a week. And it was like 2 weeks was the time for, wasn't it? We can,
14 days is what we have in our rules of procedure at this stage, yes.
Yeah, I think at this stage, and given the proximity to Shanghai, we could easily cut it down to a week, probably more, but, you always want to leave a bit more time for folks to reading it back to the constituencies and so forth. But I think we can cut it down.
Okay. Carrie?
Okay. Since the ballot closes, the vote closes when all 20 ballots have been received, we can shorten this period to the next 3 hours all by simply submitting our ballots. So I don't think we need to modify a called vote in any way, shape, or form, because we can achieve the end of curtailing the 14 days simply by acting towards,
Mr. Buchanan,
getting our ballots.
Yes, I guess the 14 days basically sets a time limit, and so if we receive, say, 18 votes by the end of the 14 days, we would basically tally those 18 votes, whereas if after 5 days we've only had 3 votes, we would still continue to wait. So I think that's a fair comment.
If I may quote from the call for the vote,
yes,
the time for this entry vote
joining.
Starts...
Hello?
Hello, Elizabeth?
Yes, hello. Good morning. I'm sorry I'm late.
Okay. You might want to join the queue for a discussion we're having on whether we should lengthen, keep the same, or shorten the current email voting period on the 4 resolutions. So far... Harold has spoken in favour of shortening it. Carrie believes that the length is basically determined by when people get their votes in. Did you have anything else you wanted to say, Carrie?
Yes, I do. I mean, the formal way this vote was called states that it ends Tuesday the 15th of October or when all 20 ballots from the NC have been received. And since it is entirely up to us to determine when the latter event transpires, we don't need to discuss formal action towards rescinding the terms of a vote that is in progress. We can simply end the vote in terms of the way it has been called by all of us sending in our ballots this afternoon. And if it turns out that there are a number of us who aren't prepared to do that, well, then it makes little sense trying to curtail the vote in any case.
Okay, Marilyn?
I actually had a question about if someone wanted to offer an amendment to one of the resolutions, they're already in progress, so that obviously is not possible. But many of the resolutions, changes were made to them, and then they were posted and put to the vote, but we did not have a further discussion of the resolutions. So if we move ahead with the vote as they are, without taking into consideration a quick review of the final version of the ERC report, that also means there's an opportunity to amend them, right?
Well, Marilyn, AT&T is in New Jersey. I think you get to amend things any time now.
Well, when you're in the middle of a vote, you can't you can't stop the vote and amend the matter that you're in the middle of a vote on. You have to wait till the vote's done.
Roger, I understand that. That's why I had asked the question earlier about whether there was a need to assess the resolution against the latest version of the ERC report, possibly reissue the resolutions and then vote on them. And I think what Bruce had started to do was to kind of go sponsor by sponsor, I would call it, right, Bruce, to ask whether they felt their resolution needed to be amended.
I did in the case of Philip, and now that Elizabeth's joined, I can ask. But I'm also stating the fact that, as Roger says, we do have a current 14-day period, and what you might suggest, Marilyn, is whether you believe that that is sufficient or you want it shortened or not. But I think the point of procedure is that if the vote fails, then you may well put up the resolution in an amended form.
I'm happy to see us take the full 14 days to consider it. I doubt that will be the outcome, however.
Okay. Ken Stubbs?
I'd like, as an admirer and supporter of Marilyn, I just would like to chime in behind what she just said. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't see any legitimate reason to shorten the vote at this point in time. I think the final votes, to some extent, are going to be weighed on the basis of the ERC report that was just submitted, and they're going to be weighed on constituency reactions to the ERC report. Some people may have taken positions based on the probability that certain issues were not going to be addressed in a favorable manner to their constituency in the ERC report, and they may want to reconsider their positions or their advice to the constituency council representatives in light of the report. So I don't see any reason to rush to judgment here.
Okay. Elizabeth, now that you've joined, one of the questions has been, following the ERC report, would you change in any way your resolutions? And that assumes, of course, that you may not have read the ERC report. And also, I guess, really asking both yourself and Philip whether you believe the 14 days is too long or whether you'd like it shortened.
We started the issue on September 12th. It was 3 weeks ago, and it was related to what we had on the table 12th September. If we do not vote it in a very short time, it is just no point to have it anymore. It is just something which shows that the Names Council is unable to work on time. We received the new proposal of ERC, and we are going to receive an additional one, an amendment, and every 2 weeks there is something else. So I don't take this one. I was surprised to discover that we have 14 days because my memory of Names Council votes was that it was much, much, much shorter. Even within a day or two, we were able to resolve urgent matters. With regard to... were you asking myself something else, Bruce, as well?
I was just asking, Elizabeth, whether you have any intent to change your resolutions or whether you're comfortable as they're currently stated.
The resolution, the resolution number 3 and 4, which are related to CCTLD matters, I do not plan to change them, and if they are not voted today, I will take necessary steps.
Okay, anyone else? Bruce?
Philip to speak.
Put me in the queue, please, after Philip.
Yep, Philip, go ahead.
Yeah, just an observation, really, on email voting. The email voting process was introduced as an attempt to speed decision-making in between normal monthly telephone conferences. That was the reason that we came up with a 14-day period, assuming we might have a new issue that would give some time for consultation and allow a vote, so that could all happen in between physical telephone conferences. We've rather snared ourselves here with our meetings and this email vote by adopting a full 14-day period, which is actually overlapping today's telephone conference, and is therefore having the effect of actually making us less efficient rather than the original intent of that guideline. That may be why some council members were expressing surprise as to how we've got here. Just a comment on that, so we may need to think about that that guideline for the future.
Okay. Well, we also, Ken, next.
Yeah, just a real quick response to a couple of comments that Elizabeth made. First of all, you're probably correct that this process started back in September 12th. But I'd also like to remind you, Elizabeth, that the final resolution that you proposed was made barely 2 days ago. So I would say that when we start a process like this, if we're dealing with the same resolution, that's your argument might be legitimate. But when you submit an amended resolution that is in many ways significantly different than the original one you proposed, I think it's only fair that any constituency that's obligated to vote on this resolution should have the opportunity to deliberate on it. In the case of the registrars, we were in Amsterdam last weekend, and if we had gotten the resolution beforehand, it would have been much easier for us to deliberate. Many of the registrars, though, have not had the opportunity to be exposed to it, and I feel it's only proper for them to have the opportunity to take a look at that. So from that standpoint, I don't think it's a matter of inefficiency, and I don't think that 2 days is a reasonable time period for deliberation, and I think that's why the intake rules were set up for agenda items for the same reason. So I do feel that we need an adequate time period, and I don't know exactly what appropriate steps you're talking about, Elizabeth. It sounds to me like what you were saying is that if we don't vote today, you're going to be taking a different course of action. If that's the case, that's fine, but frankly, I don't see the logic in voting on a resolution that was presented barely 3 days ago.
Okay, so what we can do at this point is we can have a, and anyone can correct me if my procedure is wrong, but we can have a vote to decide whether to put the motion now or whether to continue with the remaining, with the vote as stated, which as Kerry has pointed out, has a time limit of 14 days but can be shortened based on the fact of people actually voting. If all the votes are counted, then the voting period will cease.
Kerry to speak, please.
Yep, go ahead, Kerry.
I wonder just how precarious a situation we might be putting ourselves in, rescinding a vote that we ourselves have called. And I'm not entirely sure that the formal result would end up being approved by Louis, plainly and simply. And whether or not it was appropriate to set a 14-day time period for this vote, we did it, and we did it in accordance with our own procedures.
Yeah, that's correct. We're following the procedures, yeah.
Yeah, and if we now act to dash that vote back to zero, then we need to move to establish a new vote. And I'm not sure that we can take the same set of motions. And I'm not sure we can do this. I mean, this seems like unnecessary, dangerous somersaulting, especially given that the terms of the vote do allow us to terminate the balloting during the course of this very afternoon or day, depending on where people are.
Bruce, can I get in the queue here?
Yeah, and Roger too, but just with a very brief comment.
Yep. Harold first.
I have
I have two somewhat contradictory thoughts. One is I'm very sympathetic to Carrie's argument, and I have a particular concern for anybody who is not on the call today, who could not reasonably expect that we might decide to bring this up for a vote now, and could quite reasonably protest that if they had known that there was actually going to be a vote on these resolutions that could be forced today, they would have rearranged their schedule. That said, a question which I guess is of some importance to me is I understand Elizabeth's concern that the name count will not be seen as dragging its feet, but I guess, too, is there, other than that, is there a real urgency to move forward? And alternatively, is there anybody who has incentive to delay so that the thought is that if you have a two-week period, somebody who is going to vote has incentive to drag it out as long as possible rather than to just get the thing done?
Okay, Roger?
Actually, my question was quite similar to Harold's. It was really just to ask Elizabeth to comment on Carrie's point, which I think has more to do with legitimacy and procedural integrity, that once you announce a procedure and a vote, to change procedures in the middle of the vote creates questions of integrity. So I didn't really hear Elizabeth comment on that, and since she, I think, feels strongly about this, I'd like to give her a chance to.
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Yes, I had some troubles with telephone line, I believe. There is emergency, there is urgency. Since end of May, we had a big ISP in bankruptcy. If at that time, Ripney NCC has been awaiting a vote from CCTLD managers within 40 days to 3 weeks to discuss issues, the internet would be broken. Okay? In some situation, you shall not vote. You shall exactly bring the issue. When there is problem with air traffic control, you do not vote for 14 days. You do not consult the whole population. You just understand what is on stake. The stability is on stake, and the issue is important. So I am extremely disappointed that you do not understand this message, or that I am unable to pass this message upon you, that there is emergency with regard to updates to the name servers. I am sorry if this information do not pass, and if you feel that it is political matter. It is technical matter. It must be done. We rely on the internet. We can communicate because internet is here. And if we let discrepancy, we will run into problem.
Okay. Can
I make a quick comment?
Yes, Jordan, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. First of all, I'd like to say I agree absolutely with Elizabeth that it's a very important matter that we should vote, and we should vote as expeditiously as possible in the affirmative for her particular resolution. However, I think given that this debate is happening within the context of the ERC discussion and the Names Council's reaction to that, I could see some urgency had the report today or last night not been released. But given that report has been released, we're not going to shape the outcome of that particular report. I think waiting until everyone has voted and be given the chance to vote doesn't affect the process of the ERC consideration one way or the other. They'll get it in time for the next round of deliberations that they're going to have. And I think, within that we should... that there's a balance now between the enfranchisement of everyone involved and that has a stake and that's part of the Names Council versus the issue of urgency. And sometimes urgency will prevail over that, but I think in this particular case that's probably not so.
Yeah, I'll just make a comment in terms of Elizabeth's comments about the urgency. The fact that this vote has been discussed in the resolutions on the public list of the Names Council
It has been reviewed by both the ICANN staff performing the IANA function and has been reviewed by the ICANN Security Committee, and I have confidence that that issue is moving forward, so that the actual short-term operational issue of getting those name server updates, I understand, is progressively occurring. The longer, well, the medium-term and longer-term issue of getting the Security Committee to work with the CCTLD managers and the ICANN staff is something that I think is generally supported. And I think once people have had the chance to consider that, they will enter their votes. And that really is a longer term. It's not something that needs to be resolved in the next 7 days. So that's just a comment on based on my knowledge of the discussions happening in different groups. What I propose to do at this stage is to move on from this topic. I think the appropriate course of action is to follow the Names Council rules of procedure, and if people, and I would urge people to vote as soon as possible so that that 14-day period can be shortened. So I would ask people to consult with whoever they need to consult with as soon as possible, and hopefully we can get a resolution on that voting period.
Bruce?
Yes, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much for giving me the floor. If the vote is continuing for 14 days, I withdraw my resolution. There is no point to vote it until within 14 days. And where I understand perfectly your diplomatic approach, there is still many problems which are not resolved, and there is still name servers which has not been updated.
Okay.
So if at CCTLD, so if the Names Council colleagues feels that there is not emergency matter, I withdraw my resolution. We will see what how internet is going to work in such conditions.
Bruce, this is Jay Scott. Can you hear me?
Jay Scott, yes. Was there anyone else there?
Carrie, I've been asked. I've asked that thing three times now.
Carrie, okay. Jay Scott, go.
I mean, with all due respect to Elizabeth, I don't think procedurally she can withdraw her motion at this point. I think it's too late. Whether she thinks it will be ineffectual because of 14 days or not is an unfortunate situation, but it's not one we can find ourselves in. I don't understand why we have now been on a phone call for 30 minutes arguing about a procedure that's fairly clear. I mean, let's just move on with it. I mean, and quit quibbling over the rules that are clearly set out. If we don't like the rules, then we need to amend the rules, but it's too late today.
Okay, Carrie?
I just wanted to point out that it is not in the power of the Names Council to effectuate the change that Elizabeth, with every justification, regards as an emergency issue. So, sadly, I'm not sure that our taking immediate action on that on the resolution would be a pivotal, would have the desired result immediately. So the important thing is our going on record in support of this, and that is going to happen during the course of the ballot anyway. So the purpose of the resolution will be served regardless of the urgency of the action that is desired ultimately from the AMA side.
Okay. Well, I'll move on, but I will note Elizabeth's comments in the minutes, and I'll ensure that the minutes get out as soon as possible within the next 24 hours. Okay. The next topic is the next topic that we had that came from the last meeting was delete issues. There was a procedure agreed at the last meeting that a issues report would be provided to the Names Council by the 19th of September. And on the basis of that report, the members of the Names Council would consult with their constituencies to decide whether to initiate policy action. So the only decision at this meeting is whether to initiate policy action or to not take action within the Names Council on the issue of deletes. A quick summary of that deletes paper, there were four topics. The first topic was the issue that when domain names pass expiry, there is a variable period of time after which a registrar may actually delete the name, and that period can vary, and it's not formally specified in the contract. The second issue is that if there is a complaint about who is accuracy, the current ICANN registrar's accreditation agreement requires a registrar to, if there is no response within 15 days to correct that, that there is a basis for cancellation. There's the potential that a registrar may be disadvantaged in that process, particularly if they were away for some period. The third issue was how registries delete names after a registrar has requested them to be deleted. That varies across the registries, and there are issues associated with load on the registry and registrar systems depending on the delete process. And the final one is a issue relating to the effect of a mistake made in a renewal operation, that a mechanism of affecting that is to delete the domain name. The issue report has been out. I've really just sort of picked the four headings. I now sort of leave it open to discussion for anyone that would like to join the queue to decide to comment on either for or against investigating the issue.
Would you put me in the queue, please, Bruce?
Okay, who was that, sir?
That was Ken Stubbs.
Ken Stubbs, anyone else?
Bruce, this is Harold. I was briefly cut off, and I'm going to be likely cut off again in another minute, but then I will probably rejoin again in 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay. Anyone else want to be in the queue?
Philip, please.
Anyone else?
This is Jordan. I'd like to comment briefly.
Anyone else? Okay, so the purpose of the discussion is to basically speak either in favour of initiating policy action or against, not to actually set policy in this particular. So go ahead, Ken.
The issues that were brought up, I think, are quite relevant in light of some of the current areas that we've seen, certain actions that we've seen. And frankly, I think that there is a need for clarification on some of these items, so I would speak in favor of establishing some sort of process for moving forward here with the issue. I think the impacts affect not only the registrants, but the operations and of both the registrars and the registries, and I think it's a good idea to get some of these issues clarified prior to any restructuring of contracts between any of these parties, which I would anticipate seeing in the future as a result of some of the actions that have been taken so far.
Okay. Philip?
Yes, as I say, I think the paper was excellent. It outlined the issues. And I believe the consensus that we came to was that the issues were important and indeed should go forward to have some policy discussion on those, and probably the suitable mechanism for that would be a new task force to do that rather than one of the existing ones.
Okay, if I just go back to Ken quickly, are you in favour of a task force or dealing with it just at the Names Council level?
No, I think we should try. Frankly, I'm going to propose that we try to use the process as outlined by the proposed the ERC. I think that there are key members on the Names Council and of these constituencies that have participated in helping to structure that new process. And it might be a good way for us to take the first step towards seeing if we can't make these processes more effectively.
Yeah, I think even in the ERC process, though, there's still a choice between whether you wish to form a task force to look at it or whether you want to deal with it at the Names Council as a whole.
Well, I think, frankly, between you and I, between me and all of you, I'd rather see a task force dealing
okay. With Jordan?
I think to echo what Ken and Philip have already said, I think these are important issues. They deserve to be dealt with, and I think dealt with in probably the depth that only a task force can provide.
Okay, anyone else?
I'm sorry, I'm now back again. Could you just, I hate to impose, but what exactly are we discussing?
Sorry, Harold, we're talking about there's a delete issues report, and the decision at this meeting is to decide whether there is enough meat of any issue, if you like, to initiate a policy development process, and I'm looking to see whether people are either in favour of initiating policy development or not, and if they are in favour, whether they believe a task force is appropriate or whether it should be dealt with as the Names Council as a whole. So I've heard from the registrars, the business constituency and the registries or representatives from each of those who have all said all in favour and all in favour of the task force so far. It would be good to get feedback from the non-commercials as well.
Well, the issue is indeed a fairly important one, and I think I personally think the last task force did an excellent job on bringing out the issue and encouraging discussion within the community, and so I would be in favor of going ahead with the task force. I also think it's too unwieldy for the Names Council as a whole, frankly.
Bruce?
Who's that?
That's Ken Stubbs. Can I make one comment here? I'd like to acknowledge two things. Number one, I'd like to now acknowledge the Herculean effort that Marilyn Cade and her staff, Marie and the people that worked with her in helping to manage the, as well as Glenn, the work that's been done on the previous task force. I think we also need to acknowledge the fact that there has to be some sort of support mechanism in place in order to make any task force work more effectively. Fortunately for the task force that I served on, Marilyn was in effect providing a lot of the support mechanism. I'd like to hope that maybe the members of the various constituencies that could be affected by this could develop some sort of a methodology in this case to provide some support for this task force, because
Antonio Harris has joined.
It's just it might be a goodwill gesture amongst the various constituencies to show and acknowledge the fact that in order for any task force to work efficiently and effectively, it has to have some sort of a support mechanism or structure in place. So maybe we can work out an arrangement to have some of the constituencies help underwrite this. But I want to make this thing public because I think it's important that every constituency be given the opportunity to help support this effort. And I don't think it's fair to burden Maryland. Thanks.
Thank you, Ken. Now, does anyone else, anyone from the intellectual property constituency want to comment? Jay Scott or Emma?
I believe that we need to have a task force.
I agree.
Okay. Anyone else I've missed?
Yes, I'll speak for the ISPs.
Yes, Tony.
Yes, I'd certainly like to endorse what Ken said. I think that that would be very helpful, and I think it is needed. It shouldn't just be left to one person to drive it in the way it has been in the past. And as far as the proposal goes, yes, we could also support the task force approach.
Okay. Well, in the original structure that was talked about on the meeting of the 12th, what I had said there is if this committee is, the council in this call is in favour of proceeding with policy development and in favour of proceeding with the task force, that I would develop some draft terms of reference and seek the constituency's input on appointing an interim member to a task force, and that would then be presented by the, I believe, the 19th of October for decision on at the Shanghai meeting as the decision to create the task force and the terms of reference for that task force. So that's the process I intend to follow. What I might do at this stage is just call for votes, those in favour, those against, and those abstaining on that. So if I can just call, just say aye if you're in favour.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, anyone against? Any abstentions? Okay, well, I'll record in the minutes then that we have unanimous agreement to initiate policy development, to create a task force, and the draft terms of reference of that task force will be drafted for consideration by the Names Council by the 19th of October and for voting on in the meeting in Shanklin. The third item that was suggested in the last call was whether we get Alejandro Pazanti on this call to talk about the ERC report. Given that the report hadn't been released at the time I'd put the agenda together, I didn't see any value in trying to get Alejandro to present on that yet. The final report is now available. Alejandro has agreed to meet informally with the Names Council at a breakfast in Shanghai on Monday, the October the 28th. And also, Jonathan Cohen has also agreed from the board to meet with the council to discuss that. I'd also comment that on any motions or comments people have on the final report to put out to the email list and to discuss, and if we wish to go forward with a resolution between now and the meeting in China, that we do that via email vote.
Bruce?
Yes, Harold.
One question. Has anybody had Amado as the third?
I haven't personally, and I can do that. We basically put it out on the council list, and we had responses from Jonathan and Alejandro. We haven't had a response from Amadeo, but I can certainly ask him. Thanks for that suggestion. The fourth agenda topic, or item four on the agenda today, is dealing with where we are with the UDRP task force. I've had a quick review through, I guess, the public mailing list on that task force. From what I can see, questionnaires were distributed in March of this year seeking feedback on the present UDRP process, but I haven't actually yet seen a report from that. And I guess the question is really, do we have a process moving forward on that UDRP task force? If not, do we need to either bring it back up to the Names Council for discussion? What are the next steps? And I wonder perhaps if Jay Scott, if you could comment.
Sure. Been going on for the last month is I've been reading 275 emails in my box to figure out exactly where we were, because we were sort of fragmented with what's happened. And I plan to send out a list, email to everyone to reconfirm that those people that are appointed are still serving on the task force, and then to remind them of what our terms of reference are in the areas that we are supposed to be looking into. We have, I know, prepared summaries of the questionnaires that were submitted off the DNSO website. It took us several months, and we did not receive the questionnaire answers from the ICANN website until July because of the ICANN reform procedures. We couldn't get them from Louis. We just couldn't get the responses. They have now been summarized and placed into a document, and that has been circulated. Whether anyone has read it or not, I don't know. So now our point is to take that information and begin to specifically look at the enunciated areas in the terms of reference, which I believe there are about 8 to 10 areas that we were specifically requested to review. I do know from having read the emails, there is some consternation within the task force, and perhaps I need Names Council guidance here. They are, some members of the task force are a bit disturbed by the fact is they don't know where the questionnaire should figure in to their particular report. They're not sure if they are to just merely assimilate the information they received and then say, this is the information we received. I can tell you that that is not what they perceive their task to be, at least the people who have raised concerns. They believe that as a task force, they should take that maybe as an advisement, all right, that this is sort of the general feeling of the questionnaires, but they should also be able to place in their own expertise from the areas that they are coming from and be able to then formulate a report based on their expertise. And so we know the areas we need to address. We do have the information assimilated from the questionnaires. What we need to do is to have direction from the Names Council into how is that information supposed to fit in to the report. Is it supposed to be the report? It's simply supposed to be a survey. I do not think that's what at least three or four members of the task force, perhaps more, believe that the role of the survey should be. They believe that the maybe should be a way to sort of get a temperature of the public, but still that their expertise should then lead them to provide suggestions, even if those suggestions weren't requested, even if those amendments or reforms were not requested in the survey information.
Okay, Joe Scott, my approach to that would probably be to look at what the WHOIS task force has done and to say, well, you are using a questionnaire to obtain information, but I believe that you are also looking for the members of the task force and the constituencies to provide their input through those members.
Okay.
And what I would be expecting is that you would produce a report for public comment.
Yes.
And that report would include a summary of the survey,
okay,
the same as WHOIS has done, plus, I guess, some preliminary discussion or preliminary recommendations depending on the level of agreement you get. But I think what's most important is that we don't have long periods of time with nothing happening. I think it's better to get a report of some form, even if it's an interim or a draft,
right,
out for people to comment on. That would be my
approach. Unfortunately, this task force, unlike the WHOIS task force, suffered from the fact that not only was ICANN reform going on, but the two non-voting chairs left the Names Council. And I was not even appointed until July.
Yes, understood, yeah.
So, okay. I mean, it has been somewhat fallen on its own sword.
Well, I mean, the other option is that we close the task force and start again. And, you know, that's, I think, a decision the council needs to make.
That certainly is something that could be done. I certainly wouldn't want to see those survey results wasted.
Yeah.
Philip, to comment?
Yes, anyone else want to join?
I would as well. Bruce, it's Marilyn.
Anyone else? Okay, Philip, you have the floor.
If I remember correctly, the UDRP task force was unusual compared to our normal task forces, which just comprise constituency members, in that you outreach to basically put together a much larger group of experts in their field, in different fields related
That's
to
that. That's correct. There are panelists and provider representatives.
Yeah. I mean, under those circumstances, I think certainly my own view to your earlier question about, you know, the value added that those experts can make to any output, I think, is clear that I believe the composition was made so that we would put that expertise in, and the survey you've done was to act as a base, if you like, for
all right,
for that work.
Okay, Meryl?
I just want to support both what you said, Philip, but also say that I believe that the present task force, and I really appreciate the challenge that happens task force chair changes, acknowledging of what Ken said earlier, the way we're structured right now is chairs play an incredible amount of administrative support as opposed to, you know, a typical role of a chair. We all hope that will change in the future, but that is a burden that rests right now. And this task force, I know, undoubtedly experienced a significant gap and burden because of that. But I believe because of the additional expertise that is resident in the task force, that it's very important to support it going forward, bringing in the added value of outreach and the expertise those who are on it, in addition to the survey that was done, Jay Scott.
Yes,
okay. Okay, anyone else want to comment? Okay, what I suggest we do, Jay Scott, is that we put this on the agenda for the November Names Council meeting.
Okay.
And if by November, what I suggest is if you could try and establish the meetings between now and then, you know, potentially even use the ICANN event in China, if there'd be a number of participants that are of your task force there, to
yeah,
have at least a meeting.
I certainly will try. I know that
that
was tried in the last LA meeting, and it turns out like only two of the task force actually attended that meeting.
Attended,
but of course,
yeah,
that was a special meeting.
Yeah, so I guess what I'd like is a recommendation perhaps from the current task force as
sure,
to to where it's going, and,
all right.
And let's look for some results by November.
Sure.
The next item is the IDN task force update. I found it very hard to find terms of reference for this task force. What I was able to find was a briefing document that Elizabeth had written in February of this year, which was a very good summary of the issues in international domain names. But not much has happened since then. So I guess, again, I invite comment from Elizabeth as to whether you believe that does further work need to continue within that task force, or do you see other events have overtaken it in terms of the IETF?
Thank you very much, Bruce, for a summary. I will give you a little summary, and the Names Council will decide if we need to watch what's going on under that subject or not. I will be posting it to you, but I have my small text prepared. So the issue of internationalized domain name became a hot public subject in summer 2000, I believe, and each IETF meeting was expected to bring the answer and the day of implementation, and it was very soon now. When we set up the Names Council IDN Task Force in July 2001, we did not, well, actually, I was not the first chairman of the task force. The first one was YJ Park. There was no term of references, as far as I recall, because the first purpose was to understand that issue and to gather information, to listen, from every perspective, technical, linguistical, legal, security, policy. And the Names Council Task Force has been quite active in autumn 2001. And also in autumn 2001, ICANN IDN Committee has been put in place, and I've been nominated there by the Names Council. And I've been working with the IDN committee, which was comprised of a very international group comprised of experts in languages and name service technique, and led by Masanobu Kato from Japan. We also, the ICANN IDN committee had a chance to be supported with staff, dedicated staff, and to get $100,000 funds for half a year to do the job. The ICANN IDN committee has been given the task to analyze this IDN-related issue in depth and with essential collaboration from ASEAN colleagues. The final report has been presented in Bucharest and is on ICANN website. Just in few words, what was approach at ICANN IDN committee. First of all, we wanted to understand technique. It was the first work, and the second one, we were supposing that technical issue has been solved, and then the arriving to the possible expansion of TLD space by adding internationalized TLD. And we tried to figure out categories of these internationalized TLDs we could have, following the well-known path based on geography or generic, and have been looking on advantage and disadvantage of each category. And believe me, it is very interesting to read how complicated mechanism you could put in place the day you will have internationalized character put to the name server, as the domain name, I'm sorry. The most important impact of the work, whether on the Names Council Task Force or ICANN IDN Committee, or and several presentations given here and there, is the good understanding and much better perception today how complex and potentially problematic the IDN issue is. I believe at least a few people who have been reading a little bit know today that the IDN solution proposed in the ITF, if it will end up being a standard, which is still not clear yet, it will take a long time to implement. It is not only related to the domain names. So, what is the bottom line? The issue is much more mature. Today there is several group of people understanding. There are people working on that matter, but what is important for myself, I believe, is to maintain this group of people knowing what internationalized domain name means and trying a little bit to follow the issue and to be in place just in case someone arrive and try to stir up this matter and bring back the days when it was happening very soon now. So the only reason I would be seeing today for IDN Names Council Task Force is to be in contact with ICANN IDN committee, to follow the subject and to be here if issue arise, but knowing that it is something on which will not happen very soon and which is extremely serious matter. Thank you. Hello?
I hear you.
I hear you.
Okay, I just got a total silence, so figure out that it was too pathetic and too difficult.
We're still trying to figure out in what language to respond.
Excuse me, Mr. Tonkin has rejoined.
I always get chopped off on the hour, so then you always know that the call's been on for an hour if I disappear. I'm sorry, Elizabeth. Where have you got to? I heard the last bit. I think you were getting to the point where you're looking for advice. Is that right? Or
what I was saying at the end, that today we arrive at the situation that we have enough knowledgeable people to know that internationalized domain names is a complicated issue, and to not let it become back something coming soon like it was 2 or 1 year ago. And what is important is to preserve, not necessarily the same people, but at each time to have a group of people following what it is about and knowing what it is about and not lose this collective knowledge we have today. I don't know any other reason for this international IDN task force of the Names Council that just to preserve that knowledge, be in touch with other people working on IDN issues such as ICANN IDN committee maybe.
So it sounds to me like we're almost talking about having a standing committee that's available to offer advice should any issues come our way. So if the board at some point is asked to approve something in a registry agreement relating to IDN, they may request the Names Council to comment, and in turn we would request that standing committee to give us advice. That's the way I read it at the moment. I think it's probably appropriate to say that we don't have a task force and we don't seem to have terms of reference for it, but what we do have is a standing group of people with expertise in that area. Is that any comments on that? Anyone else want to comment on what Elizabeth has said? Okay.
It's Marilyn. I would make one comment about the real importance that I see, and I think Elizabeth has conveyed this sense to all of us, but the real importance that as a business user, we see in ensuring that there's a positive and satisfactory way to move forward with internationalized domains. And I think it should be viewed by the policy group of the GTLDs as an ongoing high priority to be informed and aware of any progress, including encouraging ICANN's board to be aware of our interest and support for the priority of the issues.
Yes. Well, one approach that we can use here, Marilyn, is just to put it in the agenda perhaps every second meeting to see if there's an update. I mean, there may be zero time spent on it in a given meeting, but if we did it every second meeting and said, has anything new happened? And I'm aware within the IETF that I believe some of the standards are in consideration by the Internet Engineering Steering Group, for example. So I would expect in the next couple of months various elements of progress will be occurring, but I don't believe that we actually require a task force as such. I think what we're requiring is a standing group of people, perhaps through Elizabeth, that can report every couple of months if there's anything new.
Yeah, that would certainly meet the objective that I just stated, as far as I'm concerned.
So it's effectively a watching brief. And then if something major then comes up, then we would use the new policy development process in that an issue, if something comes up, an issue report would be written. We would decide whether or not to initiate a full policy procedure and then move on from there. So I'll go on to the next topic on the agenda, item 6 on the agenda, which is the structure task force. Again, I've just gone through and looked at what task forces are currently open and try and move them along to the next step. The structure task force, I think, was originally created probably pre the whole Jewett-Lynn document, and it had the objective, or the terms of reference were to look at an improved policy making process within the DNSO, look at ICANN decision making as a result of the at-large study committee, and look at the desire of CCTLDs to form their own supporting organisation. In our meeting in Accra, Africa, on the 14th of March, the Names Council decided to look at the issue of reform at the Names Council level rather than at a task force level. Further to that, a Names Policy Development Process Group was created, and that produced a report on the 21st of August. So my sort of feeling is that things have moved on, and it would probably be appropriate to formally close that structure task force at this time. So I invite comments on that. Philip, yeah?
Yeah, I think yes, I agree. I think it's now done its job and things have moved on. So I think I agree with your recommendation. It probably just worth recording in the minutes that, as you said earlier, this structure task force does indeed predate the original Lynn report and underlines the Names Council's continuing quest for improvement in policy development.
Okay. Well, what I might do is from the Names Council just formally send a note to the members of that task force thanking them for their participation, and that the Structures Task Force is now closed. If I can just perhaps get a vote either for or against or abstain, if all those in favour of that...
Well, first, I'll move that we disband based on this discussion that we disband.
Ken Stubbs, I'll second. Okay. All those in favour say aye.
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 Okay. All those against say against. Okay. Any abstentions? Okay. Well, we'll note that as unanimously passed. The Structure Task Force is completed. The seventh item on the agenda is a discussion document, or in fact a proposed resolution from Jordan Buchanan regarding task force chairs, and that resolution is essentially saying that in the past the chair of a task force has also had to be a member of the Names Council, and Jordan's motion argues for some flexibility there where the person that chairs the task force may have specific expertise in that task force area, and that expertise may not be available on the Names Council. I'll go to Jordan now to, I guess, put his position forward and then invite others to comment. You want to go ahead, Jordan? Are you still on the call, Jordan?
Bruce, while we're trying to find Jordan, it might just be worth pointing out that in the new policy development process, the specific request that Jordan is seeking is allowed. And bearing in mind that we're unlikely to have any new task forces between now and Shanghai, it may be appropriate to strike item 7.
Except that I don't believe that the new process will formally come into play until after that annual general meeting in December, so this would have relevance to the deletes task force.
Okay.
But I'd also comment that is it appropriate at this stage to be changing rules of procedure when the Names Council has got months to run under its current arrangement? So that's a general comment I would make. But I invite other people to speak sort of for and against that motion. Anyone else like to speak?
Bruce, I'd like to speak.
Marilyn? Anyone else?
Harold?
Anyone else?
Bruce, just Tony Harris letting you know I have to leave the call. I give my proxy to Tony Holmes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Tony. Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Marilyn.
I think I will first of all say that I think it would be inappropriate to change in the interim in any case, but I'd like to speak on behalf of the merits of a strong interactive relationship between the task forces and the policy council, and I believe that is best accomplished by having the chair of the task forces a member of the Policy Council, and I speak to that from, I think, something of a voice of experience, having been involved in two Names Council task forces and the President's task force as well. The linkage, I think that for those of you who are working in the task forces and are able to really strongly reflect back into your constituency, but then also back into the Names Council and awareness of the work of a task force, that's a real significant link that we need to ensure going forward. As far as the role of chair, I would also speak in support of co-chairs. I find that really the ability to share the responsibility that the chair has with another representative is very, very helpful. It could be that perhaps only one of the co-chairs, if the Names Council felt that co-chairs were a good way to go, to the extent it's possible to recruit co-chairs, it could be that only one of the co-chairs would need to be a Names Council member. But the ongoing understanding of the rest of the work of the Names Council and the policy issues it is considering, I think, are helpful in having the chair be a Names Council member. I think there's also an added sense of accountability to the policy process that comes with that as well.
Okay. Harold.
Yes, I actually think that in some ways the resolution may not go far enough. In that I've always thought that granted I don't have Marilyn's expertise at heading a task force, but I've always thought that really the constituencies should be able to select. And then, who will serve, and then the best qualified member of the team regardless of their relationship with the Names Council, should be able to chair. It just seems to me a question of efficiency and for the functioning of the task force. And while I understand Marilyn's point, I think that if they're given the process by which this moves forward in the Names Council, I just think that any savings of efficiency by having the chair be on the policy council is offset by having the person whom the task force agrees is the best to chair, or the Names Council agrees is the best to chair, actually chair the task force.
Bruce, can I be in the queue, please?
Yes, anyone else want to join the queue?
This is Jay Scott. I'll join the queue.
Jay Scott, okay. Go, you first, Ken.
Yeah, I think there are positives and pluses to be said from both perspectives. The one thing I am concerned about, and I saw this as an example when Carolyn Chicoin left the Names Council, I think that once a person has been appointed as a task force chair, regardless of the methodology used, let's assume for the heck of it that we decided that it had to be a member of the policy council, I think that should that person leave the policy council, if that person desires to continue to remain the chair, I would not like to see an artificial barrier. I think it put an undue burden on Jay Scott, and frankly, maybe I'm wrong there, but the point is I thought that Caroline had more than adequate expertise to be able to move forward, and I think we suffer from a process like that when somebody is forced to have to step down and all of a sudden someone else is put in a position. Also, I feel that in the future, if we have the proper staff support for the task force, which the ERC proposal contemplates, it would be much easier for someone to manage the effort because there'll be a continuity within the staff support.
Okay, Jay Scott?
I, with all due respect to Marilyn, I disagree that the chair should be a member of the Names Council. One is a feeling that I have heard over the last, at least since my experience as being part of the Names Council, is that because the chair is a member of the Names Council, there's a great mistrust that it's very insular, and that for that reason, it becomes personality dominated by a small group of 21 people who control everything. And so I think it would be a better outreach to have the mechanism where chairs could be not be members of the Names Council. I also think that we find ourselves in situations where task force work is not complete and members of the Names Council, their memberships expire. And lastly, I think that the reality is the PDP, policy development process, that has been put forth and looks very much like it may be accepted, at least in a majority of its enunciated form, calls for the very reform that Jordan has proposed. And I do think deletes is a very important issue. I think it's one that's highly politicized. I think it's an issue which leads to a great amount of suspicion. So in my opinion, if it only served to bring some sense of our response to criticisms we've received, if it only affects the deletes task force, I think it's a recommendation that should be accepted by the Names Council.
Hey, Bruce, it's Jordan.
Good, you've joined,
finally,
Jordan.
Yeah, well, I actually got called away for a fire drill. I apologize for that. In any case, I'd just like to I've heard Ken and Jay Scott actually make, I think, two of the key arguments in favor of the...
Yeah, the one thing you missed, Jordan, is a discussion, and Philip pointed out, that under the new policy development process that's envisaged for the GNSO in the future, that requirement for a member of the Names Council to chair the task force has been removed. so that the task force basically can elect its chair, and I think the Names Council has to ratify that effectively. So just to let you know that information. The other piece of comment is that whether we should at this stage be changing a rules of procedure in the Names Council for the next few months, when you know, a new environment is about to go forward. And the question people have raised, the comment that maybe there won't be any more task forces, but there will be a deletes task force. And so I think your motion perhaps relates to that as much as anything else. So having given you that quick summary of the discussion while you're gone, I'll let you speak.
Right, thank you. And I'll try to keep this brief because I do apologize for being away at the start of the discussion. But I do think that it's very good that under the new policy development process that we do have the breadth to allow, you know, any member of a task force to be the chair. I think that to the extent that we are going to create any more, though, there's no reason that we can't undertake to make this change right away and to make sure that any task forces that we have between now and when, you know, any new policy process goes into effect are also conducted as quickly as possible. I briefly heard Marilyn's comments as well, and I do want to say that I think that it is probably important that there is some understanding of the goings-on of the Names Council within the group, and that's why specifically the Names Council liaison position is there, so that there is always at least some sort of representation from the Names Council, just not required that the chairmanship or the chairpersonship actually have that requirement. And I think that could allow for a good balance between the needs to have the Names Council involved and the views of the Names Council reflected in the task force, and to actually, without actually requiring that the chair be a member of the Names Council. And, you know, I think to Jay Scott's point, that if we can broaden participation and simultaneously ease the burden on some of the Names Council representatives that we have, that seems to me like a big win from two perspectives with very little detriment to the task force process.
Okay, well, this is what I propose. Your motion was only posted with the agenda, so I don't think it's appropriate to vote on it on this call, but here are your options. You can have a proposer and a seconder of your motion at this call, and we can put it out to an email vote, or we can have a proposer and seconder at this call and we put it for vote at the Names Council meeting in Shanghai. So I'll do you want to comment on that, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, given that it sounds like based on our schedule for the deletes task force that they'll be that we're looking to vote related to that in Shanghai, I think either of the two approaches is appropriate. It sounds like a vote would be, if it was 15 days from now, via email vote, that would be fine, or we could vote as long as it's done prior to the formation of the task force in Shanghai.
Okay, well, I think what I suggest we do then is put it on the agenda for the meeting in Shanghai. I'd like, I guess, at this stage to find out if we do have a proposer and a seconder for the motion.
Well, I'd certainly like to propose it.
Do we have a seconder for the motion?
This is Ellen. I'll second it.
Okay. Well, we'll put it on the agenda for vote at the meeting in Shanghai. Okay. What are we up to now? Budget. One of the things I have done is try to review where we are at currently with the budget. In terms of payments, we've received payments from the registrars, the registries, the intellectual property constituency, and the business constituency. We've yet to receive payment from the non-commercials, the ISPs, and the CCTLDs. That leaves us in a position, a cash position at the, or projected cash position at the end of September of an estimate of cash of around $57,000 at the end of September. And what we would be projecting is that we would have a cash position at the end of the year, at say 31st of December 2002, of around $35,000. and we estimate on our current expense rate of about $7,000 a month that that would carry us through, I believe, until the end of April. So it does appear that we have enough cash currently in the budget to take us through to a date when I envisage the new reforms would come in, and it's probably prudent to perhaps after the Shanghai meeting have a meeting of the Names Council Budget Committee to review that position. So I'd first, I guess, invite any comments on the current status on that. Would anyone like to speak or comment on that?
Bruce, this is Roger. Without going into the numbers, I'd say I think your reasoning is correct. What it obviously doesn't anticipate is the unknown variables of unanticipated expenses, and there are a few that could come up, as well as what the budgetary situation would actually look like in a post-April environment. So
that's right. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, and so what I was planning to do actually was not wait until after Shanghai, but even during the Shanghai meeting, one way or another, the budget committees are going to have to start working on plans for next year. It may be that we develop two sets of plans based on scenario A or B. But I plan to try to get a meeting of the budget committee together in Shanghai to begin a discussion of and engage ICANN management in the discussion of, okay, are there expenses that the that would not be covered under the plan that the DNSO would still be expected to raise on its own? And if there are not, how would the budget be managed in this sort of new environment? So really just to begin a more detailed discussion of it. So I planned by now to send a note around to people letting the budget committee members know I'm going to try to find a time when we can get together in Shanghai to start talking about this. But I think it's a legitimate point and an important point, and we just don't have enough information right now to reach conclusions on much of anything.
Yes, so the intent of this meeting is just to report on the status, and I strongly agree that having a meeting in Shanghai is appropriate. The other point I would raise is as part of, we do need to be sitting down, and the Budget Committee needs to be meeting with ICANN staff to understand the transition, because we would also need to give some form of notice to our service providers, being Glenn in the Secretariat, and I gather AFNIC giving technical services. So that's another area we need to consider is notice periods and trying to let people know what their personal positions may be as soon as
absolutely
possible.
We need to work through several layers of confusion, but to start with the first one, which is what are the basic options for our expenses for the next 6 or 9 months, and how would we deal with them? So anyway, I don't expect to have a budget committee report for the Shanghai meeting, but at the next Names Council meeting after that, we should have some kind
so
of...
So we'd be sort of looking at a report in November.
Correct.
But you'll be meeting in Shanghai.
Yes.
Bruce, can I get in the queue?
Yes, go ahead, Harold.
Just a couple of points. One, Roger, I'm sorry I'm not going to be in Shanghai, and therefore... we'll miss this meeting, but I would ask, I guess, minutes can be circulated on the budget, that would be helpful. Also, I want to resolve a point which I think we had generally addressed previously, which is just on the question of the operation of the sanctions. Since the situation now stands, we'd be looking at three constituencies, including my own, disenfranchised automatically under the sanctions at Shanghai.
And I think we can all agree that given the importance of the Shanghai meeting, that would be very unfortunate, and I think could very easily be misinterpreted in a number of very negative ways. So I just would ask for clarification that certainly we are not expecting for the sanctions to operate to disenfranchise any of the constituencies for the Shanghai meeting.
Okay. Before we address that, is there any other comments on the actual budget as it stands?
Just one quick response to Harold. Harold, I don't anticipate this meeting, budget committee meeting in Shanghai, to have any votes or take any action. It's purely educational. So, but you'll be anything we learn about, you'll certainly be briefed on.
Great.
Okay. Well, on the topic of the voting or the sanctions procedure. As with the voting procedure, I'm working off the rules of procedure and not making any arbitrary decisions there. Based on those rules of procedure, the voting privileges of those constituencies that haven't paid cease on the 20th of October. That can be averted by paying the dues, but other than that, it would require some form of separate action from the Names Council. What I had proposed, I have posted a summary of the issue to the council list, and what I had proposed is certainly there is the sanctions do not refer to the participation of those constituencies. In fact, those constituents are still members of the Names Council. And what I had proposed was that in terms of any voting on any issues, the votes of the voting members would be formally counted, but the votes of the constituency subject to sanctions would be noted in the minutes, and that information would be publicly available and certainly available to the board in any decisions it made as a result of motions that it received from the Names Council. So I tend to think that, again, and also looking forward into the future of the GNSO, and the GNSO, and as Roger says, things are a little bit uncertain, but I'm assuming that we probably won't run into the same problems there, in that ICANN would be centrally funding the activities of the GNSO, and so it wouldn't be relying on constituency dues, and I doubt that the debts of the past would have an impact on whether a constituency would be able to participate as a voting member under the GNSO. So again, we're talking about a very short period, which is over the next few months, where this is applying, and my advice is to deal with it through appropriately noting the positions of each constituent and formally seeking the input on any issue from each constituency as we currently do. So I invite comments on what I've just said. If anyone like to join the queue on that?
I would. But
okay, I'll put you down, Harold.
Anybody else who wants to go first can go ahead.
It's me. You go ahead, Harold.
I hear what you're saying. I think that this may, in fact, I would recommend strongly that we take action to defer operation of sanctions until after the Shanghai meeting. I think that while we have had had considerable discussion of this during the spring and summer, and I think we've all agreed that the input of the constituencies on equal footing is significant both for the essentially for the constituencies, the process, and our outside observers who are looking at the process to understand that the process is emerging as a consensus of all of the constituencies that are represented. Given all of that, I would very strongly urge that the operation of the sanctions be suspended at least until
Marilyn
the
Kate
Shanghai
has
meeting.
Okay. Anyone else want to speak on that issue?
I would, Bruce. It's Marilyn.
Of course. Anyone else? Okay. Go ahead, Marilyn.
I'd like to support the concept that we wait on dealing with the sanctions and after the Shanghai meeting for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think that we all understand the importance of that particular meeting and the criticality of having full participation from a very diverse group of representatives from all the stakeholders. There's a political value to that, but there is more than a political value to that. And when I say there's a political value to it, I am talking about the fact that governments remain concerned about whether or not there is broad participation in ICANN from as many stakeholders as possible. But I believe there's a practical reality to it as well, and that is helping to evolve ICANN and to reform it and to establish stable structures that continue to go forward, I think does require the participation of all of the constituency representatives who are presently in the Names Council, and I would not support I would support giving them a continued ability to participate and vote and to deal with the sanctions issues after Shanghai.
Okay. Anyone else want to speak on the issue?
Elizabeth.
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Bruce. I am almost speaking like an outsider of the Names Council. My question is with regard to the bylaws. I'm sorry, I was never asking myself that question before, but is that possible with regard to bylaws to prevent the DNSO DNSO constituency to have voting rights on the Names Council?
Yes, that's the current rules of procedure.
But is that possible in the bylaws?
Elizabeth is asking a different question. She's asking
right.
whether the ICANN bylaws would
override the rules of procedure.
Yeah,
I would need to seek advice on that. I don't know.
The bylaws have never been examined,
Elizabeth.
I mean, the bylaws themselves are silent on that, so we don't know, I think, is the answer.
Yeah, the bylaws speak very well. There is several sections speaking about 2/3 of members of Names Council, 1/2, etc., all these kind of rules, and quorum and majority and what does it mean, consensus. But there is nowhere actually, it is silent if it is within Names Council powers to decide to prevent constituency voting rights.
I'll just read the rules of procedure section. It says the voting rights, but not the right to participate, of that constituency's representatives to the Names Council are suspended until such time as the DNSO or its agent receives all past due amounts. It then has a paragraph that said these procedures are designed to conform with the ICANN bylaws and provide progressively greater pressure on constituencies that fail to pay their dues. So that's what's currently in the rules of procedure. I can certainly seek the legal advice of the ICANN General Council on that, but I'll hand the floor across to...
Bruce, it's Marilyn. Can I?
Go ahead, yes, Marilyn.
I would urge you to consult with Louis. I've had a discussion with him at a very high level on this topic in the past, and I don't want to paraphrase my discussion with him, but I came away with an understanding that it was not clear one way or the other, and that I think always raises a question in my mind, that if it's not clear, so perhaps we should wait to hear from you by email after, or from Louie by email after you get a chance to consult with him.
Yes, I will seek the formal advice. There's two approaches. Let's take the scenario that the advice is that it is acceptable. You still are then left with the issue that under the current rules, the voting rights are suspended on the 20th of October. Your other approach that you can work on in parallel would be, and I think the most appropriate in this case would be to have an email vote on a resolution to suspend that the effect of that rule or change that rule of procedure in time for that meeting. So I would request that perhaps Harold and others that support Harold work on a resolution and we can put that to an email vote.
Well, is there a reason we can't vote on that now, or that it's like...
Yes, we need to give 14 days notice of motion.
Good point.
Bruce?
Sorry, who's that speaking?
That's Ken Stubbs, Bruce.
Okay, go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, I'm just going to take 30 seconds to say that there's still a significant amount of consternation among some of the constituencies in that it would appear that some constituencies who have the capacity and the wherewithal to process and collect funds from their members have still not contributed in any way whatsoever towards the 2002 operational budget. Also, there have been, unfortunately, some correspondence on some of these other constituency mailing lists counseling people not to pay because there's no reason, because somewhere down the road ICANN's going to pick up the tab anyway. And I think that that's a very poor way to deal with these issues. And at some point in time, I think it would behoove us to ask those constituencies who have not paid to indicate why they still haven't paid. Now, I'm not. I've already gotten explanations from, frankly, from the non-commercials and from the CCTLDs, but I am somewhat curious as to why there have been no funds collected at all by ICANN from the ISPs. I'm still somewhat at a loss when you look at the makeup of that constituency. There are certainly businesses that have the ability in there to help facilitate some sort of collection. So I'm not trying to, I'm just a little frustrated when I see that. Thank you.
And that's Tony, is it?
Yes.
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay, just to respond to the points that Ken raised, I find it somewhat surprising now that people still think it's absolutely so easy just to mention people like WorldCom, Global Crossing, ISPA, Genuity, Verio, plus organisations such as Kabasi as well, who have their own particular problems in their part of the world. I will add that we are working to resolve this and still are endeavouring to do that through the activities within the constituency. In terms of any lobbying that any of the constituencies shouldn't pay, well, that isn't something that has been happening within the ISPs, and I find that somewhat surprising if it's happening elsewhere. So I think there needs to be some recognition that the world isn't as it was 1 year ago or even 2 years ago. There are particular problems out there, but we are undertaking every effort to resolve this as we currently speak. Thank you.
Yeah, and also, this is Bruce Tonkin, just comment that the same impacts affect registries and registrars, so, and many of them are running at a loss. Certainly some of them are publicly listed. I would just ask the question, Tony, though, do you believe that your constituency would pay its dues by the 20th of October? What's your expectation?
I think we will be able to pay something by the 20th of October. That's my hope. Currently, I wouldn't go further than that.
Thank you. Okay. Any other comments on this topic?
Bruce?
Elizabeth, yes?
Yeah, very short comment. I believe that the ICANN was able to find resources to help some of advisory committees recently. And if I can could apply the same approach to other supporting organizations, it would be helpful.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm taking two actions out of this discussion. One, I will seek formally the advice of the General Counsel, Louis Tooton, on under the bylaws, whether it is appropriate for the Names Council rules of procedure to be followed. And in parallel, I leave it open to the Names Council members to put forward a motion. And I recommend that if such a motion is put forward to the list, then we would put that out for an email vote after a 14-day standard process, basically. The brings us then to really almost the end of the meeting. Part of is really just what I tend to do at the end of each agenda is try and identify items that people have raised already and note those for the next meeting. So the next meeting in Shanghai, I have an update on the transfers task force work, an update on the Who Is task force work. At the last call on the 26th of September, Harold Feld believed we should look at a response to the Department of Commerce MOU, and I've invited Harold to put a discussion or a proposal to the council list, hopefully well in advance of the meeting in Shanghai. And likewise,
to clarify that what I meant by response is not necessarily anything in the form of an official vote, but just that there we should have a discussion. That is, I don't expect to be proposing any kind of resolution or anything, but
you might provide a discussion paper. I'm just wary of open discussions given limited time generally in calls. So if you'd like to sort of identify the points or the issues you believe should be discussed, that would be useful.
All right.
And I guess the same then also, Marilyn, you proposed some discussion on the appropriate role of governments, and I'd note under the new interim report that was just published from the ERC in the last 12 hours, they do give the government advisory committee the option, I believe, to appoint a liaison to the GNSO from the Government Advisory Committee. I don't think they have to, but they have the option to.
I think that's interesting. I actually thought that there was a need to have a discussion more broadly about the role of the GAC and governments, including discussing what was proposed at one point in the previous GAC resolution, asking for veto authority over ICANN policy decisions. And that was more of the nature of my concern to raise.
Okay. Well, perhaps you could put something to the list on what you think the key issues are there.
Sure.
And references to whatever documents we should look at that.
Grant, I have a question.
Yes, go ahead, Grant.
For those of us who aren't going to be attending Shanghai in person, will there be dial-in audio facilities so we can communicate that way, participate that way?
Are you on the call, Glenn?
Yes, I am, Bruce.
Are you able to answer that question?
If you want dial-in facilities, there can be. It is $2.96. Per port per minute.
$2.
No, sorry, not dial-in. I mean,
yes.
Audio in.
That's audio, yes. In the
so there'll be an audio bridge?
Say how much it is again, Glenn, I'm sorry.
$3 a minute.
It's $2 a minute to dial out, but we only have to have one connection out.
Yes, so that's one port.
That's one port. And
yes.
So if I provide a bridge off, I mean, first of all, I guess the question would be, Glenn, what would it usually cost? You know, usually there's the cost of a bridge, and then there's the dial out to it.
Well, I've been given the rates of $2.96 per port.
Right.
As being minus 10% discount on that, as the prices when I asked our provider that we use normally.
I mean, there's two issues here. There's one, that the cost of a bridge. There's also the cost of whatever facilities need to be installed within the convention centre. I mean, there's usually a charge for providing wiring for microphones, etc., that would be required for that.
Bruce, can I speak on this topic?
Yes, go ahead. Yes.
I understand that we are concerned about cost, but I think it is very important that we have that we provide the ability for all of the Names Council members to participate in the Names Council actively, given the critical issues that we're going to be dealing with.
It's Grant here again. Bruce, on your last point with regards to the cost of actually facilitating electronic audio communication within the hall and hence via that to remote parties, is not the same degree of audio and visual and electronic and computer support going to be provided at Shanghai as is typically provided at Names Council meetings?
I don't know, Grant, and I believe it's been a bit difficult to be clear on that in communications with the host, the host for that event, but my experience in this business is you never make assumptions. You find out for sure. But what I will do, I'll ask Glenn to investigate providing the ability to have members of the Names Council dial in to the meeting in Shanghai.
Thanks.
Okay, is there any other business that anyone would like to raise? The only other thing that I would just remind people that there is a Names Council breakfast scheduled for the Monday morning of the week of the ICANN meeting in China, and that will be an opportunity to meet with some of the board members and also an opportunity to discuss the agenda for discussions in the constituency meetings. And also in the General Assembly meeting on the Tuesday morning prior to the Names Council. So I'd encourage those that will be attending ICANN in China to let Glenn know if they will be available to attend the breakfast.
And can I just ask one question which is sort of non-related, but is it the understanding of all of you that you do need a visa to...
You need two things, Marilyn. You have to have a letter of invitation inviting you into the country for a specific purpose, and in order to get that you have to write ICANN, mm-hmm. and you need to give them your full name, your birthday. I don't know if you have to give your age. You have to give your passport number, and you have to give the address of your hotel.
The information is provided on the ICANN site. However, I believe it is consular practice to issue tourist visas to people who are going to China for business purposes, just as long as you don't tell them explicitly that business is the purpose of your visit. And this was something that was suggested to me by the Chinese consular facility in Stockholm. So
So that's what you need to do, and it takes 5 days to get at least 5 business days to get the letter of invitation if you go that route. And China is on a holiday until the 7th.
For the members of the Names Council, edification, anyone is especially those living in the United States, if there is a company in Washington, D.C. that does an excellent job of obtaining these visas very, very rapidly, and if anyone needs a link to their website or contact information, I'll be more than happy to provide it to you. Just send me an email.
And could you just email that to the council list?
I'll be happy to. It's called Travel Documents Incorporated. It's right in Washington, D.C., traveldocs.com. But I will send an email out to the council. And they will do the same thing for any foreign resident as well. You just Federal Express your passport and the appropriate stuff, and it takes approximately 3 working days to get the merchant to get this back. So.
Yeah, Marilyn, where I'm at right now, just to let you know why I kind of know what's going on, is I don't have my visa yet because I don't have a hotel room. And because they're on holiday, I'm waiting for the gentleman on the ICANN website to get back with me so I can have an address, because I don't want to show up there in immigration and have a snafu with hotel or something.
And so the view is that we do have to have the letter from ICANN in any case.
Yes.
You can ask for a tourist visa. When I spoke to the consular facility in Stockholm, they told me explicitly that if you are going there on business, you will need a letter from your partner. However, if you cannot arrange that letter, we will be happy to give you a tourist visa.
Yeah, that's what had been explained to me, that unless I was going there for transactional business, that a tourist visa.
Yeah.
That's my understanding too, Marilyn. If you're going there to conduct business,
right,
then you're required. But if you're, they're more than happy to issue a tourist visa. They're not about.
But you still need to get that in advance, Marilyn, so don't rely on rolling up
right
at the airport.
So
something else that may be useful to know for those of us who are really in a predicament, you cannot get a visa to enter the People's Republic of China at the border other than the border from Hong Kong.
Right.
So if you're really stuck, you can transit Hong Kong and you can get in.
This is very helpful. Thank you, everyone. I have to do this before I go to the ITU.
Well, it is helpful, and it is helpful when we have these, and perhaps because I've had to do a little self-education, and it's been a bit frustrating, and I appreciate everyone's help.
Let me just also say, if any of you are interested, at the ITU, Plenty Pot today, Res 102 is coming up, which addresses the role of the ITU in ICANN, and I have a copy of it. I'd be happy to talk to anyone who's interested privately. It has language in it, which I think most of us would find of interest. Will not be the only draft resolution, but if you want to follow a bit about what's going on at the ITU related to ICANN, just send me a private email.
Okay, well, that brings us to the end of the call, and thank you, everyone, for participating.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Bruce, bye.